You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Friday, February 13, 2026. Why can't we be friends? Proposed refinery tax law pits Utah against its neighbors. Published by Robert Hours and Housley Carr. Utah legislators seeking to lower the state's at the pump tax on gasoline and diesel have proposed a controversial alternative, a tax of up to 24 cents on every gallon of transportation fuel produced at Utah's five refineries. Given that one-third or more of that gasoline and diesel is piped or trucked or sometimes railed to neighboring states, the new tax would not only hurt refinery economics, it would also significantly raise the wholesale cost of Utah-sourced fuel in Arizona, Idaho, Nevada, and Wyoming, and likely lead to retaliatory legislation in nearby state capitals. In today's RBN blog, we discuss the bill and how, if it passes, the measure would impact Utah refineries, Uinta Basin production of waxy crude, and plans for piping more refined products to Las Vegas and Reno. Utah is an energy powerhouse. It ranks among the top 10 states in crude oil production and, with five Salt Lake City area refineries with a combined capacity of 209,000 barrels per day, it is the number one producer of refined products in PADD 4, Rockies. Number two, Montana has four refineries with 203,000 barrels per day of capacity. That makes Utah a primary supplier of gasoline and diesel not only to in-state wholesalers and retailers, but to many of their counterparts in the four nearby states listed above. Generally speaking, about two-thirds of the roughly 115,000 barrels per day of gasoline and roughly 60,000 barrels per day of diesel produced at Utah refineries is consumed within the state. The balance is exported to Utah's neighbors, with about 80% trucked to close by Idaho and most of the rest sent on the UNEF pipeline to Las Vegas. With a national focus on affordability and the day-to-day economic challenges faced by many Americans, a few state legislators in Utah have been developing and promoting a bill that would, 1. Have the state's 37.9 cent per gallon excise tax on retail gasoline and diesel sales, levied at the pump, and, 2. Establish a new tax of up to 24 cents per gallon on gasoline and diesel production at the state's refineries. Our understanding is that the 24 cent refinery tax is designed to achieve revenue neutrality for Utah consumers, after having the state's excise tax, and to generate new revenue by applying the refinery tax on the 30% to 40% of the transportation fuels now shipped out of Utah. Proponents of the Utah bill theorize that their plan would reduce the tax burden on Utah gasoline and diesel consumers by enabling the state to receive at least some tax revenue from consumers in other states that depend on Utah refineries for their fuel. They estimate that the refinery tax, if approved and levied, would trim the retail cost of gasoline and diesel sold in Utah by 10 to 20 cents per gallon and save the average Utahan a few hundred dollars a year, all while maintaining current funding for state transportation projects. That may seem all well and good, but there's a long list of reasons why this one-of-a-kind legislation would have a significantly negative net impact, not just on Utah refineries, but also on Uinta Basin production, plans to pipe more refined products to Nevada and, ultimately, on Utah consumers and the state's reputation as one of the best places to do business. Next, we will discuss what we see as a few of the bill's primary negatives. It would hurt refining economics. If the bill is enacted, Utah refineries would face new, direct costs of up to 24 cents per gallon, or $10 per barrel, that refineries in other states do not have to incur. Those costs would slash refinery profitability. It could spur out-of-state and in-state buyers to find other sources. Big increases in the cost of Utah-sourced gasoline and diesel would lead wholesale buyers in neighboring states to at least consider other possible sources of supply, such as refineries in Colorado, Montana, Washington, and Wyoming, even railed in barrels from the Gulf Coast. Moreover, such a tax could trigger new pipeline construction from the Gulf Coast to bring in product long-term. It would be challenged in court. Bill opponents say the measure is unconstitutional. They note that Article Y, Section 8, of the U.S. Constitution prohibits states from enacting laws that excessively burden interstate commerce, and that Section 9 of the same article prohibits Congress from imposing taxes or duties on goods exported from any state. According to an often-cited 19th-century Supreme Court ruling, what a state may not do directly, it may not do indirectly. It would spur legislative backlash in neighboring states. Legislators in Idaho and other potentially affected states are tracking the Utah bill and considering retaliatory measures. Some have pointed out that Utahns depend heavily on Idaho for agricultural products and water that ultimately flows into the struggling Great Salt Lake. The Idaho legislature is currently considering a joint memorial statement that urges continued interstate cooperation and good faith dialogue to address transportation funding and energy policy issues in a manner that preserves affordable energy prices and maintains the long-standing cooperative relationship between Idaho and Utah. There are still other reasons for Utahns to be concerned. One is that the five refineries in the Salt Lake City area are the leading consumers of the state's best-known crude oil, waxy crude produced in northeastern Utah's Uinta Basin, which accounts for more than 90% of Utah oil production. As we said in last summer's drill down report on the Uinta Basin, each of the refineries is fitted with the special equipment needed to process waxy crude, which has a number of very favorable characteristics, including medium to high API gravity and very low sulfur and acid content, but is a bear to store and transport. Among other things, it has the consistency of shoe wax in a tin at ambient temperatures and needs to be heated to well above 100 degrees Fahrenheit to flow. As a group, the Salt Lake City refineries can receive and process more than 80,000 barrels per day of the stuff, or about half of recent Uinta production levels, and the capacity for trucking and railing waxy crude to faraway destinations, like Gulf Coast refineries, is relatively limited. If the proposed refinery tax were to result in lower utilization, or complete closure, of one or more Utah refineries, Uinta production may well be reduced. Similarly, a Utah refinery tax would be expected to have significant impacts on interregional gasoline and diesel markets. Last fall, in One Thing Leads to Another, we discussed a possible multi-phased expansion of HF Sinclair's refined product pipeline network across parts of Pads 4 and 5, West Coast, that would allow up to 150,000 barrels per day of incremental product to flow into various markets. The first phase of the plan would include expanding the Pioneer Pipeline, jointly owned by HF Sinclair and Phillips 66, and now running at or near capacity, from Sinclair, Wyoming, to Salt Lake City, and debottlenecking HF Sinclair's wholly owned UNEF pipeline from Salt Lake City to Las Vegas. That project, targeted for a final investment decision, or FID, in mid-2026 and completion in 2028, would allow about 35,000 barrels per day of additional Rockies source supply to move into Nevada. Additional phases under evaluation would, if ultimately approved. Number 1. Expand and reverse the flow on HF Sinclair's Medicine Bow pipeline between Denver and Sinclair so it runs west, not east. Number 2. Add still more capacity to the Pioneer pipeline from Sinclair to Salt Lake City and the UNEF pipeline from Salt Lake to Las Vegas. Number 3. Build a new pipeline lateral from Salt Lake City to Reno, Nevada. It's too soon to know for sure, but it's easy to see how a market-changing refinery tax on gasoline and diesel produced in Utah could significantly alter the economics of making refined products in the Salt Lake City area and piping them to Las Vegas and Reno. This is especially evident when you consider that ONEOK's proposed Sunbelt Connector will bring price-advantaged Pad 3 Gulf Coast barrels into the Phoenix area, and that Phillips 66 and Kinder Morgan's planned Western Gateway project will transport low-cost barrels from Pads 2, Midwest, and 3 all the way to Southern California, and possibly from there to Las Vegas. Whether the Utah bill will advance is still an open question. It is championed by the lower chamber's speaker and majority leader, but it is strongly opposed by refiners and other business leaders concerned about the measure's impacts. We'll continue to track this closely and provide updates. Why Can't We Be Friends is a hit single by the funk band War off their 1975 album of the same name. The song, written by the group, rose to number 6 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and number 9 on the U.S. Billboard R&B chart. The personnel on the recording are Papa D. Allen, percussion and vocals, Harold Ray Brown, drums and vocals, B.B. Dickerson, bass and vocals, Lonnie Jordan, keyboards and vocals, Charles Miller, sax and vocals, Lee Oscar, harmonica and vocals, and Howard E. Scott, lead vocals and guitar. Why Can't We Be Friends has been used in a number of television shows, movies and commercials over the years. It was played in outer space when NASA beamed it to the linking of Soviet cosmonauts and U.S. astronauts for the Apollo-Soyuz project. The Why Can't We Be Friends album also included the hit Low Rider. War started as a world music R&B unit from Long Beach, California. The group was discovered by producer Jerry Goldstein and singer Eric Burdon, The Animals, while playing at the Ragdoll Nightclub in North Hollywood, California, in 1969. Goldstein signed them to a management/production deal, and Burdon used them as his backup band for two albums. The first, Eric Burdon Declares War, yielded the big hit, Spill the Wine. Eric Burdon and War have the distinction as being the last band that played with Jimi Hendrix, as Hendrix joined them at their gig at Ronnie Scott's club in London for a rousing jam on the song Tobacco Road the night before he passed away. War went off on their own in 1971 and released their first album, entitled War, the same year. The group's most successful album was their fifth LP, The World is a Ghetto, which went to number one on the US Billboard album and R&B charts and yielded the hit singles The Cisco Kid and The World is a Ghetto. The LP was listed as Billboard's number one album of 1973. War has released 18 studio albums, including the two with Eric Burdon, 3 live albums, 7 compilation albums and 60 singles during their career so far. Lonnie Jordan, the only member from the original band, still tours with other musicians under the War name.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.